The following interview is conducted as part of the Georgia Institute of Technology's Everyday Georgia Interview Project. Today is May 18th, 2018, and the interview is taking place at Kennesaw State University Special Collections and Archives. The interviewer is Amanda Pellerin, and the interviewee is Kelly Campbell. And if you wouldn't mind just telling us briefly your affiliation with your organization.
My name is Kelly Campbell, and I am a board member with the Brain Injury Association of Georgia. I'm also a stroke survivor.
Great, thank you. And thank you again for participating in this project. We're going to start with some background questions. Can you tell me where you were born and where you grew up?
Griffin, Georgia. Okay. So I am a rare breed, born and bred in Georgia, stayed here. And then I went to Florida State University and then came to the Woodstock area in 1991.
Okay. What made you go to Florida State?
The degree program, actually. I was a special education major, and it was a five-year program where you got your bachelor's and your master's simultaneously. And it also had a concentration in behavior disorders, which was my field at that time. And my master's degree is actually in neonatal and special ed. So I was actually part of the very first group of people who ever had a education degree in neonatal. So I actually worked, birth through three was my certification.
Okay.
And I actually worked with babies that were in neonatal intensive care.
So did you work with hospitals?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, sure did.
Down in Florida, or did
in
you move
Tallahassee,
back?
Yeah. Okay. Now, when I moved up here, I started working in public school system, but I was working with preschool and kindergarten special ed kids.
So. Okay. In the Woodstock area?
Actually, when I moved up here first, I started in Covington Conyers area.
Okay.
And then transferred to Cherokee County.
Okay.
And that was, I guess that would have been summer of 92 is when I came to Cherokee County. And Townley Parkway was still two lanes. And,
yeah.
You know, it was tiny. It's a lot of growth in this area since then.
Definitely. So when you came back up and you were working in preschool education, how long did you stay there?
I stayed in education in some way or form for almost 21 years.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. And then you moved to Wood, so you were in Covington Conyers
for about a year.
A year.
And then
okay.
I came up here. And then I taught in Cherokee County until 2000. And that's when I ran for school board and won. So I had to, because I was on the Board of Education for Cherokee County, and the superintendent went from being my boss to my employee, technically, I had to leave Cherokee as far as teaching. So I came to Cobb County to teach.
Okay.
And I was at the Walker School for a couple of years. And then I chose not to run for re-election. So in 2004, I chose not to run for re-election. So I stepped off the board and then came back to Cherokee County for a little bit. And at that point went into administration.
And that's when you entered the degree program here
at Kennesaw.
At Kennesaw
yes,
State University.
Exactly.
Was it Kennesaw State University then?
Yeah,
okay.
It was. This was 2005.
Okay. So. Right. Tell me a little bit about your experience being an elected official on the school board.
It was very interesting. I think the biggest thing that got me about becoming a real elected official was that you go in with so many things you want to do, and you don't understand why they're not doing it this way. It makes so much sense. And then you get in there and you realize there's so many laws and so many regulations, and your hands are tied in so many ways. And in my case, I was one of seven, and there were a whole lot of 5-2, 6-1 votes where I was the lone man out. And so you can't change everybody's mind and things don't get done. But so many of the things I went in thinking, these are great ideas, let's do this. There was some law or there was some regulation, there was some reason it couldn't be done. So I was meeting a lot with state reps and our congressional reps going, okay, this needs to change, but I can't change it on this level, need you to change it on this level. So I think the biggest thing was it's slow. The process is slow, but it gives you a whole new, when you hear campaign promises, you just kind of go, uh-huh, I know you want to, but the chances are that you're never actually going to have that done. So But it was interesting. I'm glad that I did it. It gave me a whole new perspective, I guess, of the education system that I've been part of for so long. You know, and I was very fortunate because I was a special ed teacher and I had this neonatal intensive care concentration. And then my son was born 12 weeks premature and ended up in a neonatal intensive care. So I've kind of gotten the 360 degree for education. I've been a teacher, been a parent of a special needs child, and then I've been on the school board. So I've seen that, and then administrator. So it's been a really interesting journey educationally.
Yeah, but it all kind of seems to connect.
It does.
Go circular, right?
It really does.
You mentioned a son. Can you tell me, do you have any other family?
I do. I have a son, Charlie. He was the one that was born prematurely. We were told that he would never walk, never talk. He actually had a massive brain hemorrhage when he was 48 hours old. And we were told, no, he'll never walk, he'll never talk. If you're lucky, he'll be mentally handicapped or learning disabled. And he just graduated last May from Baylor University.
Wow.
And he's just now finishing up his first year of grad school. So
that's amazing.
It was pretty amazing. You kind of beat all odds. And then my other son, Gus, is a just finished his sophomore year at Mercer and is transferring to Tech in the fall.
Oh,
so,
great.
Yeah, he's excited about that.
Yeah. Awesome.
But my whole family's in this area. We were born in Griffin, which is just south of the airport, Atlanta Airport. But everybody's kind of migrated up here. My mom, my stepmother, my brother and his family, they're all Marietta-ish, you know, Marietta, Kennesaw, Woodstock. So
okay.
They're all here.
Yeah. Going back to your school board experience really fast, or any, because you've held a couple other elected positions, is that right?
No, that was, well, I was a school board chair for 1 year, but that was the only
elected.
Right, the school board was the only elected position.
Okay. So. What do you feel like was the most, you've talked about your challenges, but what do you feel was the most successful?
I think getting the things done that we did get done, like we were the first county to do the modified calendar. So we were the first county that does the breaks throughout the year. So our summer's a little short, but we have the week in September, the week at Thanksgiving, the 2 weeks of Christmas, a winter break, and a spring break. And we get out before Memorial Day. And that was huge for me that I spearheaded that and got that done. Other ones are kind of minor, but huge. When I got on the Cherokee County School Board in 2000, corporal punishment was still a thing. When whether you believed in corporal punishment or not, it wasn't the job of a teacher, especially in a society where, you know, there's such a, we're a sue happy society, and all I could see was one of the teachers that I worked with, because I was one, to me, I felt like I was one of them, because I had been, and I thought, they're going to get sued, they're going to get in trouble, they're going to get arrested. So we were one of the first counties to finally say no more corporal punishment within the school system. So I guess it was a minor, I mean, they seem minor, but looking back now, I mean, the modified calendar is so popular, it's just part of our everyday, and I got to know that, you know, that was part of something I got to do when I was on the board. Was kind
of
interesting.
You can kind of see the impact.
I can see the impact,
That's
yeah.
great.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about your interest in hobbies.
Okay.
And I think in this, if you can talk a little bit about your affiliations with the organizations.
Okay. To talk about that, I kind of have to go back a little further.
Sure.
You know, I was a special ed teacher for years and years, and I was, in 2009, I was an assistant principal at the International Academy in Mableton, and had finished up that school year. And that summer of 2009, right after, and I do mean right, like 2 weeks after my 41st birthday, excuse me, I had a stroke, and it was way out of the blue because I wasn't overweight. I didn't have heart disease. I didn't have high blood pressure. I wasn't taking drugs. I, you know, did not live a high-risk lifestyle of any way, shape, or form, had no family history of any of it. And it took a while, but we discovered that I had a rare genetic disorder.
Hold on.
Okay.
Sorry.
No problem. Did I pause too long?
No. It's telling me that there's... it may actually still be recording.
Okay.
It's just Yeah, it's telling me there's a low battery, although the battery looks fine and the Wi-Fi is off. But we're still going here.
Okay.
So.
If you need batteries, I have double A's.
Do you have double A's? And I have an extra recording device, too. Okay, so I'm just going to turn this off.
Do you mind keeping time for me?
Yeah.
We were at 10 minutes.
10 minutes, so maybe a 20-minute timer.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Sorry about that.
No, it's fine.
So that's we were talking about your, yes, I know. We were talking about your 41st birthday.
Yes.
2 weeks later, you had a stroke.
Yes.
Without any kind of
warning whatsoever. Literally, I'll never forget because it was a Tuesday night, and that's when Chopped had really just kind of started the TV show, and it came on at 10, so I'd watched it. And I did have a little bit of a headache, but nothing like you would think. And so I took an aspirin and went upstairs to lay down. And when I laid down, it felt like the aspirin was stuck.
Mm.
So I went to get up to try to dislodge it, and my whole left side was completely gone. It was completely paralyzed.
Wow.
So as I got up, I fell out of bed. Fortunately, my roommate heard. And when he came up, I'm laying there. I had no idea what's going on. And he took one look at me, and he said, "You're having a stroke. Your whole side of your face is fallen, too." So he called 911, and we got to Kennestone. And Kennestone at that time, no, it is now, was not a certified stroke center. It is now. It's one of only three in the state of Georgia. But they had to life flight me to Emory, which I was very lucky because unlike a lot of stroke survivors, I never lost consciousness and I never really had cognitive issues. I mean, I was answering the nurses. I was answering the questions. So I have a very vivid remembrance of being in the helicopter and flying over Atlanta at midnight, which was really kind of pretty. But so they got me to the hospital, and then I spent 10 days at Emory and then another 2 months in an outpatient rehab center at Cobb General. So since then, I came home non-ambulatory. Since then,
Can you explain what that means?
I wasn't able to walk. I came home in a wheelchair. I wasn't able to walk or stand on my own. So since then I have learned, with the help of a leg brace and a cane, I do walk and drive. I actually live alone since I'm an empty nester. And because of that, my focus shifted. I went from education to kind of brain injury awareness and started working, joined a local support group and started working with the Brain Injury Association of Georgia. And that over the past 8 years has kind of morphed into my becoming, I started working with fundraising with what we call BIAG, Brain Injury Association of Georgia. And then that turned into an opportunity to serve on the board of directors. So I'm now a board of directors member for BIAG. And then the support group that I joined, about 3 years after joining it, they asked me to take leadership of it. So I've been leading it for the past 4 or 5. And it's now one of the biggest groups in Georgia, one of the biggest groups in the United States for stroke, brain injury, and aneurysm survivors and caregivers. So that's become my new focus and that's really, if you ask if I have hobbies or interests, that's really it. So is working with survivors especially and caregivers, just helping, and wearing awareness more than anything.
Okay, how big is that organization?
Brain Injury Association of Georgia serves about 50,000 people a year, and our support group has about 100 people in it, which is, we run in a monthly meeting, probably 45 to 60 a meeting, which is, they consider a support group successful if you have a consistent 8 to 10.
Wow.
So, yeah, we're really pleased. I'm glad that people are able to find us. I just hate that they have to. You know, there's that mixed blessing and growth.
Right.
You know, because growth means that more people need us. But stroke has become the fastest growing disease or illness between 35 and 55 in the United States. So.
Wow. Is it a local? I mean, to get that many people, mm-hmm. are you getting them from all over? And it being a statewide organization.
Right.
Are you do you change your monthly meeting locations?
Now, our support group is based in Marietta. It's
okay.
Based right outside of, it's a WellStar group. It's right outside. It's based at Kennestone Hospital.
Okay.
But under the umbrella of BIAG, we have 27 statewide groups. So pretty much anywhere in state of Georgia, we can find you a support group. And we just literally last Friday launched a virtual support group. One of the gentlemen that's in my support group is doing a virtual group.
Hmm.
And our first meeting with the virtual group had people from all over the United States and Canada.
Wow.
So we do it Fridays at 3. So today will be our second virtual group. So we're trying to reach the people that, you know, are really nowhere near a support group,
mm-hmm.
or can't drive, or can't drive at night. You know, we've had several survivors that wanted to come, but their caregivers can't drive at night, or, you know, they can't drive at all. So trying to find ways to, you know, help people get in. So.
Yeah. What are you using? Do you need to get that?
Is that mine?
It's okay.
I apologize.
I'm going to see if I can get my phone voice notes going too, so that we have backup.
Mm-hmm.
It's always good to have technology backup.
Always.
What technology do you use for your
it's very interesting in late 2016, I was contacted by a group out of UCLA, Berkeley, in Los Angeles. And they were starting a new website, kind of a clearinghouse of all things stroke and brain injury. You know, they were trying to get up all the TED Talks, all the magazine articles, all the journal articles, all the videos, all in one place, kind of a social site for survivors. And because my group kind of hit the radar because it was so large, they asked our group to be the beta tester. We're kind of the flagship for this. So we've been working with them for almost 2 years, year and a half now. And so they are the ones that are kind of our tech support. They're the ones that set up our live stream, our virtual group. We have a discovery system, which is a sign-up system that we're able to catch survivors before they leave the hospital, get them signed up so that we can get them funneled into a support group and funneled to the right resources. And that parent company is called Wahala, which is Chinese for We Survived. And the website is strokefocus.org. So.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that one because I saw... I saw that there was that organization connected
mm-hmm.
on your resume and everything.
Yeah.
So is that a relatively newer
versus
the BIAG?
Oh, BIAG's been around for 40, 50 years.
Okay.
My support group is 23 years old. Wahala Stroke Focus, we just came online late 2016, early 2017.
Okay.
So we're still growing.
Yeah.
It's getting there. But it's their technology, their use of a TV system and an online system that's allowing us to use technology
mm-hmm.
to grab survivors and start these virtual support groups.
Do you think the people that are coming to your group from, you know, national
mm-hmm.
locations and international locations are doing so because they don't have that service in their community?
Yes,
okay.
That's exactly right. Like we had someone from Missouri, just way out in the middle of nowhere, just
mm-hmm.
there just was no support group.
Yeah.
There, so.
Okay. Can you describe a significant person or event which has influenced who you are today?
It would definitely be the stroke. So it's absolutely nothing I'd planned. This is certainly not a trajectory of life that I ever thought I'd be on. But I'm glad I'm here. So I do tell people a lot, and they always look at me like I've lost my mind. But there's been so much good, so much blessing that has come out of this. I don't know I'd go back and change it if I could, because the people that I've met, some of the things I've been able to influence and be influenced by, I would have never had that opportunity if life had just continued on the way it was going. So it's turned out to be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So absolutely. But I would have to say my support group members are just, I didn't go to a support group for probably 2 years because truthfully, I didn't think anybody understood because I did not have cognitive issues, but I was clobbered physically, you know, no left side whatsoever, no use of my hand, no use of my leg. And I was seeing other survivors. I was in inpatient rehab and I was in a foul mood because I was watching all these other survivors able to use their affected side. And so I was sitting next to a lady and she was putting pegs in a pegboard with her affected side. And I was, I don't know what I was doing, playing stupid crossword puzzles. They gave me some sort of busy work. And I just remember just seething because she was beside me and she was moving. But then they asked her what color the peg was. And it was a green peg. And she said, blue, yellow. And tears just started pouring. And because she knew it, but because of her aphasia, because of the cognitive issues, she couldn't get the word green out. And I stopped. That was my epiphany. I stopped complaining because there could have been, and that's when I went to the support group and lo and behold discovered, yes, a lot of them are much better physically than I am, but I'm a lot better cognitively or memory-wise. But there's such a common, we tell people all the time, yes, we present in different ways, but there's this thread of commonality amongst all of us, regardless of how you got your brain injury, whether it's an aneurysm or a stroke, motorcycle accident, we have three people that got hit by cars and had brain injuries that way. We have this common thread. There are things that are common to all of us. Mm-hmm. So.
I think this is a good time to segue into mm-hmm. the Georgia Tech Initiative that you're working with or a part of.
Mm-hmm.
So can you talk to us about how you initially became involved with that?
It came involved through the support group. I kind of have a standing invitation to Tech, UGA, Brunel, Georgia State, and Georgia Southern that they can send students or researchers at any time to visit our group. We're on several, you know, we sign people up. Another partnership we have is in Western Carolina University, and there's a doctor there, a PhD, that is trying to come up with a right brain stroke registry, because right brain strokes are more, like myself, which affect the left side, are a lot rarer, are a lot less survivable, and you have less survivors of right brain strokes than you do left brain strokes. So she's trying to do a right brain registry. So as we get new people in that have right brain stroke survivors, we sign them up on this registry. So because our group is large and because our group is out there, I think we get attract the attention of a lot of universities, and so, which is wonderful because then we are offered all of these research projects. And this one, Caitlin had sent me an email explaining what it was, and I actually jumped on it because I'm like, wait, this fits me, you know, because my left side is still paralyzed, and so I have no functional use of my left hand at all. And when I first met Caitlin, it was completely fisted. It took like myself and another person to be able to pry my fingers open. And so I honestly, because I had zero movement and such spasticity, I thought I have no chance. I mean, I'll go and meet with her, I'll let them see it, but they're gonna turn me down. I've been turned down for hand studies before because I didn't have any movement whatsoever. And Caitlin said, no, you're exactly the kind of person we want to try this with. So that's how I got a part of it.
Caitlin, what's her last name?
Sims.
Uh-huh. And she's the woman that was in the video, blonde?
Yes.
Tall
blonde.
Do they have a title for their study or? I know it's haptic technology.
Yeah, I didn't even know that till I saw the video.
Okay.
I've been involved since January and had no idea that's what it was actually called. We just called it the glove.
The glove.
So, the glove.
Okay.
You know, it
All
was
right.
the glove study. And it's been interesting since I've gone through it. We've now signed up five more of my support group members that are going to be in the next round, which I guess is technically round three, which will start at the end of August.
Okay. So what is your role in it, in the program?
Test subject.
Okay. Can you talk about how the technology, like what the technology is more,
sure.
like to whatever
right.
level you feel comfortable
right. sure.
explaining it or, you know, in your own terms?
Well, for me especially, what this glove does is it gives constant electrical stimulation. It's low current with occasional pulse. when you do, a lot of survivors, a lot of times when you're dealing with spasticity or other muscular neuro issues, you do something called electrical stimulation. And what that does, though, is it pulses for like 10 seconds, and then it goes off for 10 seconds. So you kind of get that pulse. What the glove does is that it's a consistent. It never stops. It's low, and then it might pulse in a pattern, and then it stays low. So you're getting constant shock. And it doesn't sound real comfortable, but it's not. It really isn't that bad. But what that's doing is kind of re-waking up the nerves in your hand, or in the hands and the fingers. It's also, in my case, reminding my brain there is a left side. Don't forget you have a left side, because of the damage done to the right side of my brain through the ischemic stroke. Then my brain, I have to be very careful. I'd be very mindful, like, to make sure I do things with my left side, you know, even if it's just massage or dry brushing, whatever, so that my brain does not forget, hey, there is a left side. We want to keep that left side in your mind. And so that constant stimulation is what kind of wakes that brain up and kind of re-wakes up the nerves. So
when did you first go into the study?
I went into the study the end of January.
Of this year, of this 2018. Year. Uh-huh. And so you're how many years past your...
July will be 9 years. 9 years. So I started the glove study 8.5 years post-stroke, which is kind of far, which was another reason I thought they're never going to accept me. One of the, I guess, banners that my support group marches under is that so often medical professionals especially will tell survivors the first 6 months to the year is all the gain. Whatever you don't gain by the first year, you'll never get back, which is so not true. We've seen, you know, people get things back 20, 21 years post-injury. And our motto is, you know, even the most minute step forward is a step forward. And so it's kind of our charge to get medical professionals to stop saying, once you've hit year one, you've gone as far as you're going to go, because it's not true, and it's demoralizing. We get survivors that come in, and when we tell them that's not true, they burst into tears because they've just been told over and over, this is it, you're not going any further. But I do have to admit that being 8.5 years out, I didn't expect to be able to be part of the research project, because most of them cap it at 3-5 at the most. So
what has happened since January?
Well, the biggest thing is, and if you saw pictures, which I can show you, you might go, well, that's not a huge deal. It is a huge deal for me. My hand was so spastic, it was in a fist position all the time. In fact, it was literally like that. When I first got the glove, I was not able to put it on by myself. I would have to go and find somebody to help me, because I couldn't pry my fingers open enough to get it and keep them open to get it on with one hand. And within a week, I was sitting there, had it in my lap, and I was waiting for someone to help me, and I was just kind of playing, and all of a sudden I looked down and I had 3 fingers in by myself. So the biggest thing for me has not been that I've gotten any real movement back, but it's gotten so much more open and so much more relaxed that I think the next step, it's going to make it easier for me to do any kinds of therapies or exercises to start getting functional movement back. So breaking that spastic pattern has been huge, and I absolutely believe that was the glove that did that. It's because I ended up wearing it for almost 9 weeks.
Okay, and like how long a day?
Well, it started off, you have to wear a minimum of 3 hours a day. I would wear it for 7 or 8. You know, I'd wear it as long as I could stand it. So, but yes, and it was every day, every single day.
Does it, as you say, as long as you could stand it, in the video I watched last night, mm-hmm. I noticed that people go about doing mm-hmm. their normal activities, as they're wearing the glove. So mm-hmm. did it impede any of your normal activity?
It didn't, because it was on a hand that I don't ever get to use anyway, mm-hmm. so it just kind of was there. I guess the only time I would say it impeded my activities is that because it's a prototype, it could not get wet. So to be very mindful if it was raining, you know, to take it off before I left and that kind of thing. So it was just those kinds of things. But no, I mean, the interesting thing is that when I first started, they did sensitivity testing. And it was interesting because 1 was the best, 5 was the worst. And I was all 5s when we started. And I was all 1s when we ended.
Wow.
So when I first started, wearing it for 8 or 9 hours was no big deal. But toward the end, by the end of 3 or 4 hours, it really started like, okay, I can feel this. I mean, you are being constantly shocked.
Mm.
So it was never painful, but it was definitely more, it got more uncomfortable, kind of the more, which was a good thing, because the more I could feel, you know, more sensitivity I had back in the hand, the more I was like, okay, this is shocking me, but which was great, so I can't complain. So I think there toward the end, I was wearing it maybe 3 or 4 hours a day versus, you know, 7 or 8.
Okay. Anything else that you want to share with that over that 9-week period, or how the technology, the hopes you have for right. it, like you mentioned, now are you going to go back into another or a new physical therapy kind of thing?
The physical therapy. Right now, I'm doing chiropractic neurology, which is a brain therapy,
mm-hmm.
and it's remapping those wires. So I started that in December, and what we did was we didn't work on anything that had to do with my hand. We just worked on my leg because we didn't want to skew Caitlin's results.
Mm.
But now that it's over, I went back. I spent Wednesday in brain therapy, and we really started focusing on my hand more. And they feel like, yeah, that there's a way we could at least get maybe more loose, maybe even some functionality out of the hand. So I think the other exciting thing, too, is that it became a conversation piece. I mean, honestly, as a prototype, it was ugly. I mean, it was basically a weightlifting glove with a motor box on the top of it. And it was a little self-conscious at first, but it was such a conversation piece. As soon as I would tell people this is a Georgia Tech prototype, their eyes got really big. They wanted to hear more about it. So it also helped open awareness. It opened dialogues. And my support group is so excited. I mean, like I said, we've got 5 new volunteers that want to start with the next round, which I think is the end of August. And the feedback that I was able to give and the other ones that did these round 1 and round 2 were able to give, I know that the waiting till the end of August, because they're doing a redesign to make it more functional for people who do only have one hand,
mm-hmm.
they can put it on and off by themselves. So that's exciting.
Yeah. Great. I'm excited.
Mm-hmm.
I think it has so many applications,
yes.
you know. Is there anything else you'd like to share that you feel like we didn't talk about?
Mm-hmm. Not really. Okay. Other than, you know, just to what I appreciate the most about this particular study at Tech is that it's real-world application. There are so many studies. We get so frustrated as survivors because they do all these research studies that really have nothing to do with what's going on with our daily lives.
Mm-hmm.
This one's extremely important. You know, it's not metaphysical, way out there, may affect 2 or 3 survivors across the globe. This has far-reaching consequences for millions, millions of people. So it's really exciting.
Yeah, that's great. All right, well, thank you for
sure.
meeting us today and talking to us a little bit about your experience and your interaction with Georgia Tech technology and research. You know, I wish you the best in the next study. Will you be part of that next phase?
I hope so.
Yeah, yeah, I hope so too.
I'm kind of begging.
Yeah. So it was so nice to meet you, and thank you again.
Thank you so much.
All right, very good. You ran just a couple minutes over
that's okay.
30, so.
But that's where we started.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
May I see your hand now?
Yeah. And see, now I can open it, you know, by myself.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just completely.
And before, would you have spasms when you would try and open it, or would
so
just go back?
That by the time I got this open, it would still do that. I mean, I remember my mom was helping me try to wash it, and it took both her hands and my hand to get it open enough.
Wow.
And now I can do it on my own. So.
Wow.
Like I said, and for a lot of people look at it and go, that's not a big deal. I'm like,
no,
that's
yeah.
a huge deal.
Like you said, I like what you said about, you know, any even small forward
mm-hmm.
motion is still forward
the
motion.
Most minute
yes.
step forward is still forward.
There was something on the BIAG Facebook,
mm-hmm.
Like a little thing where they talked about how the experience of a stroke survivor is
mm-hmm.
You only know it once you've gone through it, mm-hmm. but then once you've gone through it, you can't explain it.
Right, right.
Like this being this catch 22.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, that was very powerful to me.
And that's the importance of the support group. It's like we have a new survivor and a caregiver, and she's overwhelmed. And we hear a lot, my family thinks I'm lazy, my family thinks I'm not doing anything. And so we have to sit and explain. We call this a 3-to-1 club, because once you're brain injured, regardless if it's a TBI, ABI, whatever, it now takes 3 times the amount of energy. So the same amount of energy that you guys extend to go 300 feet is the same amount of energy I have to go to just go 100 feet. So when you work an 8-hour day, it's a 24-hour, it's equivalent to 24-hour day of mine. So brain injury survivors fatigue much faster. And it's hard, especially, in a lot of ways, I'm a lucky one because I present as disabled. You know, brain injury is called the invisible disability because you have people that don't look, you know, they speak well, they walk well, but that brain fatigue, that memory issues, and then people are, oh, you're just lazy, or you're, you know, why can't you remember? Well, because I'm brain injured, you know, and it's hard to put into words. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. But to tell that survivor, that caregiver, she said, I've never heard that. I just thought he was being lazy. I'm like, no, he's exhausted.
Right.